aftershock. Can you hear me, Scott?
I can hear you, and I'm listening to my music.
Hey, tell me how that works.
Because my ears are open. I'm using my Bone Conductive headphones from Aftershocks, and we're real excited.
Yeah.
We've been anticipating these. We've actually been wearing these. Don and I have both been wearing these new headphones by Aftershocks. We've been talking about the Trex Titanium. They now have a new version called the Trex Air. And what is exciting about those is they're lighter and more durable. They're freaking awesome. You can't even tell they're on your head.
They still have the same great sound as your Trex Titanium, but these are a bit lighter.
Now, if you go to our partners page and click on the Aftershocks link, not only can you get a pair of these new Trex Air headphones, or you can get the pair of the Trex Titanium. They're still available. And if you use the code FREESLEEVES when you check out, you'll get a pair of TRN all-weather sleeves for free. $20 value.
Simply go to the partners page and click on the banner.
That's what I just said.
You said that. Well, I didn't hear it.
Did you have the old headphones in?
I'm wearing a set of in-the-ear set right now.
There you go. You should have had the Bone Conductive Aftershocks.
That's what happened to me. Health IQ, life insurance for the healthy people.
HealthIQ.com/TRN. Go sign up. See what you can get for being a healthy runner. You need life insurance. It's something that you should have. And you should get the best rates from the A-rated companies. Health IQ puts them all together.
It puts your mind at ease to know that they have done the research for you and they've located the right price so you can go out and train and stay healthy.
Yeah, don't mess around on the internet just playing around trying to find the best rates. They've done it for you. Go to healthiq.com/TRN.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts, over there with a skeleton behind them, very early morning in the studio, it's Scott and Dom.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will, the Group of the Nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. We ready?
Yeah. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I am not Scott War.
But I am. And today, we're going to talk about Ultra Running Magazine. You know, we've talked about it numerous times on our podcast. We reference it all the time because it is the voice of our sport, right?
Sure, it is.
In fact, I think they... Do you have a registered trademark on the voice of the sport, Carl?
You know, apparently we do. Medinger gave me all the legal documents on that back in 2013 when we bought it, and that's still a file in a cabinet somewhere I never looked at. But yeah, my understanding is we do have that. That's just kind of cool.
That's awesome. And if you are new to the sport, Ultra Running Magazine started back, I think, back in 1981. And did Carl start it? I mean, did John start, John Medinger, did he start it back in 1981?
You know, I think he was an ultra runner then, but he wasn't the founder of it. It was Stan Wagon and Fred and Peter Gagarin is my understanding. We actually have an article in the next issue about those guys, which is kind of fun to read. But Medinger bought it in 07, is my understanding.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Carl took over ownership of Ultra Running Magazine from Tropical John Medinger back in 2013, like he just said. He's a former investment banker. Did you know that, Don?
Carl is or John? Carl?
Carl.
Fantastic.
Investment banker, and he is a hotel entrepreneur. He started the Larkspur Hotels and Restaurants.
Is that right?
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yep. And at one point, you had amassed, you were either owned or managed like 30 hotels and restaurants. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
That's amazing.
I was kind of a business and finance geek, and back then I focused on those things. Like I started focusing on ultra running when I turned 40. And so that's kind of what I did.
So you started back in 2003. That was your first ultra that you ran. I think it was the Quad Dipsy, and you became ultra obsessed with ultra running then. And since then, you've run over 70 ultras. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's where I am. Yeah. Hey,
let me ask you a question, Carl. What happened in 2003 that made you say, "Wow, you know, this is what I want to do"?
Yeah, well, I had done more traditional sports before then. I was still playing soccer and baseball even, and I got a pretty bad injury. Well, I had a bad knee injury, and I got really out of shape. And I'd never really run more than 4 miles at a time, or if I was in some sort of game or chasing a ball. So a friend of mine at a New Year's Eve party, after we'd done a lot of drinking, kind of dared me to run a marathon to get back in shape. And in that state, I said yes. And I remember my first training run was January 11th, and then March 3rd, I did the Napa Marathon, and it was hell. And but once I crossed the finish line, I'd never felt that good in my life, to be honest. And I think I did like 4:04, and so I'm a numbers guy. And so I was close to that four, and within just like 10 seconds, I was like, wow, I could do that again. And then it was like, I have to do that again. And, you know, I never really stopped. And the key on the ultra running is just that it was the people that I ran with, the older ultra runners, the community in our neighborhood, really, they embraced me and supported me and encouraged me. And it was such a family. And, like with most ultra runners, that's really what fueled it and supported it. And then, so yeah, it was in that November that I did the quad, and I kept doing the other sports for a while, but then I went full time ultra running around 05.
I'm gonna speculate and say the marathon was on road, and then you go and you do Quad Dipsy, and that's obviously some of the best trail on the planet that I've discovered. What was the contrast between the road and that trail? Did you just turn from the road completely and go trail exclusively after that?
I did. I pretty much did. I really love the trails. I like the challenge of the trails, you know, and it kind of requires a little more agility and athleticism, I guess. I like that. I like the variety of the up and downs. I mean, I love to run downhill. I'm a bigger guy than most ultra runners, and downhills, I just go kind of like a bowling ball. So I like that. I like doing that on a trail. Although I did do a few other road marathons, actually, to be honest, because I just didn't have foot speed, or, you know, the idea of a tempo run was not, I was just a sprinter, really. So, but my last road marathon was in 07. I swore those off.
And you got below the 4 hour mark. I'm certain you must have.
You know, in 07, I became obsessive. So not only did I do that, but at New York in 07, I ran 2:59:57 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And talk about pain and suffering. And so, yeah, once I ran a marathon with a 2 in front of it, never again. I accomplished that goal, you know, because I like to set big goals, and I felt like I definitely am not a sub-3 marathoner. There's no way. And so really, and so when I did it, I was done.
So compare that sub-3 hour marathon to some of your harder ultra marathons. Which was more difficult?
Good question.
You know, it's totally different. You know, I'd say the shorter races, I've done the single Dipsy too. Shorter races are so much worse than ultras. You know, you're redlining and you're just pushing so hard, and the pain and the suffering of sustaining like your fastest possible speed is awful, and you just can't wait for it to be over. So, in an ultra, to do an ultra well, even if you're racing, you never really do that until like maybe the last mile, because you're just going to burn up. So, even though you're pushing and feeling a lot of pain and digging deep, you have to stay sustainable. You have to stay right on that edge. And so, you know, by its nature, you're not going to that really dark place. So I prefer ultras for sure.
Yeah, you know, that might be one of the best kept secrets that we have in the trail community, that road marathoning or 5Ks are so much harder. They think that we're doing the hard stuff, but we secretly know that, in fact, they're doing the stuff that's really hard.
They're racing for 5K, and we're only racing for one. Hey, yeah. I have a question, because you've run many different distances and been successful. I don't know about this, Don, but he placed 14th at Western States. What year was that? 2010?
Yeah, that was 2010. Yeah.
One thing that we will tell you, Carl, is as we tell stories about you, if it's over exaggeration, just accept it.
Yeah, leave it alone.
If we shoot below par, go ahead and correct us. But if we overshoot, just go ahead and accept it as truth. But yeah. He's actually going for your 10th Western States Silver Buckle this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so my question in all this is, you've run all these distances. What is your distance? Which distance do you love the most?
Definitely 100.
And why?
No question about that. Because I'm slow. And I'm tough, you know, and I'm stubborn. And when it comes to ultra running, if I have anything that is really athleticism, I think, which means to me just some natural talent that you're like born with. There is something that happens, I believe, in the 30 to 35 mile range of any ultra. And that's kind of the moment of truth for me and for a lot of runners. It's like your stomach either stays together or goes south, or it starts to get easier, or every step starts to get harder. It's in the mid 30s. And for me, I hit that mid-30s, and then if I'm well-trained and prepared, everything gets easier. It's really weird if I'm having a good race. And in my good hundreds, when I really raced them, it was in the mid-30s that it just everything got smooth, and I literally would run faster with less effort. So, and it just came from nowhere. It came from somewhere inside. So that's why I like hundreds. But to prepare your body for, and then I just kind of have a lot of fun usually to like mile 70 or 80, and then it is pretty much of a slog. But it's nice because you get closer, and then if it's a really good day, it's kind of like the faster you run, the sooner you get there. Mm. If you're really having a good day. But that hasn't happened in like 5 years. But I'm hoping to maybe get there this year. I mean, you get there by doing the training, man. You get there by doing 100-mile weeks and by turning 20 milers into feeling like a 5-miler. Mm-hmm. And I'm really far from there. But if I'm lucky this year, I'll try to get closer to that and have a better race for my 10th.
Hey, Carl, I agree with your experience, and you said mid-30s, and my magic number has and continues to be 40. If I'm feeling right, it all comes together about mile 40. I know that I get a preview of what the rest of the day is going to look like, and things do get easier, and I feel like I'm in the zone now. I'm in the groove. I just got to keep this going, and it's at 40 I know the answer. And certainly I don't know it at mile 4. But at 40, I got a pretty good indication. And with that said, there's a lot of moving parts with that feeling right at mid 30 or 40 miles. And it's your magazine that brings a lot of that content together. A lot of knowledge from the trail, from people that have done that, from mentors that we have. And you've collaborated all of those ideas and philosophies and theories into one spot, and that's your magazine. And I think that's one reason we all turn to it, because there's great, not only great pictures, but great content.
Yeah, well, thanks. It does put us at the middle of the sport, and that's what we try to do. And it's a privilege, but it is a lot of work.
So I have a question. Successful banker. Successful in the restaurant and hotel genre. What in your mind was going through that said, you know what, I want to back away from that and go into publishing a magazine? How does that come about? Did you have experience at it?
No experience. I really like new things though. But I had decided that we would sell the hotel, or we decided we were selling it, and the hotel company. It was the right time. My financial partner needed liquidity, and the best thing to do was just to go ahead and sell it. So, and when I got into hotels, I thought it'd be the first of a number of different ventures, and it had been 17 years. So it was 2013. It was like April, and like this thing was going to close in a month, and we were just coasting to the end. And my phone rang, and it was Medinger, and he said, "Well, Carl, how's it going? So you want to buy a magazine? Yeah, you want to buy a magazine?" And I'm like, I paused, and my head was saying no. And but I didn't say anything. And then from like inside, you know, I was like, yes came out. And I was, yeah, my fate was sealed right there. Because, you know, I'm not going to say yes to him and then not do it.
Hey, Carl, maybe he was just selling you a subscription. What made you think he was selling the whole magazine?
I got to ask him. I have to say, when things got rough here, there've been more than one occasion I said, "Do you want it back?" And he's always said no. So, so that's what happened. I knew I was going to do something new because I really like new things, and life is all about like these new chapters and new phases for me. But I did tell myself after the hotel thing, I'm just going to take a year off and do no work, nothing, and just wait and let the next thing come to me. And yeah, Medinger's call just upstaged all that. And my thesis in college about business was, I just remember there's this guy I profiled, and his big saying was, opportunity comes to pass, not to pause. And you know, I just felt on the phone that this opportunity was right there, and I could either take it, or if I passed on it, it wouldn't come back. And so that's kind of guided some of my crazier decisions in life. Bigger decisions.
Well, then I have the next question. I raised my hand. I told Scott I had the question.
You,
and I
did
totally,
you lose it?
Well, I wrote down, opportunities comes to pass, and not to pause. And I wrote that, and I lost my question.
Well, I want to know, you go from Goldman Sachs to managing and owning restaurants and hotels to now you're a publisher of a magazine. What kind of learning curve is that? Did John hold your hand for the first couple years? Or did you just jump in with both feet and go, okay, now what?
Did he give you a Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah, when I do new things, I really like to not have any knowledge, and I like to really start fresh. Because I think if you're going to do something like well or something different or unique, you need to really rethink all the conventional approaches. And so I prefer not knowing anything and then taking a really fresh blank page kind of look and going for it. And along the way, and learning a lot of lessons the hard way. And definitely stumbling and bumbling through it. But the things that you think of that are new, that enables you to do are the ones that are truly, you know, worthwhile. So, I just like to go all in that way. And it was a good thing I'd never done it. But yeah, I had no experience. I had no business doing it. I was really inefficient and made lots of mistakes, but I was just kind of all over it. So I like that aspect of it.
Do you find that some of your experiences running an ultra have helped you be a better business person? Like you just said, you made a lot of mistakes going into owning and publishing this magazine. Did you find that those mistakes are more beneficial to you and you learn from those instead of getting discouraged by those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, business and life itself really is a lot like ultra marathoning, where, and for me, it's like you set this really big, audacious goal, and then you have a plan and you really work toward it and you commit to it. And that's what your life really is. That's really what ultra running is. It's the training and the prep. You know, by the time race day comes, you know, you gotta have that base and that plan and that, you know, training or degree or whatever. But then, once the gun goes off, then you go into a whole nother mode of problem solving, reacting, and just getting shit done, you know. And I love that. And that's what I've done in business. That's what I've tried to do in life. And that's what I've done with the magazine. And that's what we've done with my ultra running. What's weird is my ultra running is, you know, so I was fueled by PRs there for years. And for like 5 years now, those have been really scant. And so I am taking kind of a new approach to ultra running in the magazine, where I'm more like just giving back and supporting sport and others. And that's kind of what the magazine is a platform for me as well.
Carl, I agree. One of the things that I take from my experiences ultra running is in the training, I'm trying to expedite or find the mistakes. Having the mistakes happen, I'm almost eagerly awaiting those mistakes so I can figure out how to deal with those, so that when it comes to race day, that I know what to do. And I think that that's been something from my business life that I've brought in, is I'm not afraid of those mistakes. In fact, I eagerly await them and anticipate them with some excitement, so that I can figure out how to fix those mistakes or grow from those mistakes or learn from those mistakes, so that I can become a better business person. So I can really relate to that.
I mean, mistakes are the opportunities. Those are the gifts. And, you know, younger kids these days are so afraid to make mistakes, and there's so much pressure. And I see that, and that disturbs me, because mistakes are the gift, man.
One of your contributors, Ann Trason, well-known ultra runner, has mentioned...
Ann who?
Trason.
Oh, yeah, Ann.
that good ultra runners are problem solvers, and that's what you guys are referring to. Find a problem and fix it, and fix it on the run, and persevere. So,
well, yeah. And I think, too, as I get older, and, you know, Don and I both have kids, you have kids, I think that we need to encourage mistakes instead of downplaying or shaming our kids when they do make mistakes. We need to say, you know what, you made a mistake. Now, what did you learn from it? And let's move on. I think that those are very
valuable. Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of parents get so involved with their kids too. They try so hard to keep them from making mistakes,
right,
or having any pain, that then kids are getting that message.
You know,
it's like well intended, but it's not good.
I'm gonna digress a little bit in a story that I heard recently from.
I can't help you, Scott.
Peyton Manning.
Sounds like
Peyton Manning.
Okay.
And his dad, the first game as a rookie, when Peyton Manning was his first game, was miserable.
His pro game?
His first pro game.
Okay.
He went out there and just stunk it up. And he remembers one time after the fact, watching the TV replay of that, and seeing the camera cut to his father, and his father just grimacing.
Uh-huh.
And he said, that hurt more than the failure that I had on the field, to know that my dad was disappointed in me. And I think that we need to overcome that, not only as parents, but even as ultra runners out there supporting our friends and our family. You know, we need to embrace that and encourage those mistakes and help people get beyond those.
Hey, I'm going to get back to the magazine for a second, Scott, as you're waxing philosophy over there. The magazine didn't always start out with the glossy cover and the amazing content.
or color.
The first edition that came out, it was more of a something like your high school newspaper back in the day. You know, somebody printed it up and used the Xerox copier and handed it out. Talk a little bit about that early edition and where it's come and evolved from that time.
Yeah, you know, it's all about technology. And before computers and the internet, print magazines were really the only way to find out what was happening in the sport, literally. And the running magazines back then, like Running Times, it was called that because it was just a list of all the running times, the races, and where people finished and where they ran.
Cool.
And my understanding was that ultra running, you know, was kind of like that. It was really just full of race reports and race results. And it was the only place you could get them. And old school ultra runners would tell me, you know, we'd run the race in March and then we'd wait in June to find out where we finished and when we got ultra running. So, you know, that's its heritage and people like that. In the modern day, you know, where you can get a race results as the race is even going online, it's really not a viable strategy for a business to pin itself just on that. Print media's got all sorts of challenges. And so we have tried to morph it to make it more entertaining and more like a successful magazine in the modern era. And we've kept the race reports because people love them. And it's about 25% to 33% of our content. But we're actually trying to make the race reports, if you've seen it, be more what we call feature race reports. So there's amazing photos. We have more, you know, space to telling the story and the depth. It's not just it was sunny at the start and Joe Schmo took the lead at mile 30. And here are the results. So we're trying to morph it that way. And then have a lot of other, you know, whether it's the color and the glossy, but we're trying to help ultra runners with our ultra coaching section. We're trying to share the history of the sport and the lore with what I think we call ultra geek and with science in there and topics like that. We're trying to entertain and have fun stuff with this section we call Ultra Life. And so we're just mixing more things into the magazine to try to make it more relevant.
Yeah, I that was one of my questions is how have you stayed relevant? You answered that perfectly even before I asked the question. My question is in the day and age of smartphones and the internet and digital stuff, what has been your challenge and how have you overcome that with a print media magazine versus a digital magazine? And do you find that more people are subscribing to the digital versus the print, or give us your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think print still is unique and print has a niche in the marketplace, especially for topics that are really focused and have like a passionate group or an obsessed group of people who follow them. If you're an ultra runner, this magazine, you know, is 80 pages of nothing but ultra stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even the ads are interesting and relevant to a lot of ultra runners and what you go through. And, the sport is also really well, conveyed with really great photos and images of people doing incredible things and in really beautiful, wild places. So I think that there is a niche for an ultra running magazine, print periodical, you call it. And even though the challenge is that the younger generations, I mean, they don't even think about magazines.
Yeah.
They think we're just dinosaurs. But I mean, I think if you put one in their hands, hopefully they enjoy it and can sit back and just let it soak in and turn the pages. And getting through to them is tough. You know, our circulation has gone up kind of steadily, but not a lot. And it's been a struggle, but it has gone up. It's partially because the sport is growing, you know, quickly. It's grown in every single year that we've recorded it. It just goes back to like 1990. And it keeps growing. And as long as that happens, I think the magazine will keep having a niche, but it's a challenge. And obviously, as you point out, having a online and digital presence is really, really important. And we spend a ton of time on that side of the business now too. And Corey Smith, who is a principal in the business, he invested in it a couple of years ago and pours his heart into it and is a great partner. He manages the entire online side of the business, the website, the e-newsletter, the results database, which is fantastic now. And he also does all the production. He basically does everything at the magazine. He's incredible. But building that digital presence is a huge part of our strategy, and we're definitely growing all on that side really substantially as well.
If you are listening to this podcast and you haven't subscribed, or if you're not getting the printed version of the magazine, I will tell you, like Carl just mentioned, you have to get it in your hand. It's one of the few pieces of mail I look forward to every month when I can go out to my mailbox and I pull that month's Ultra Running magazine out of the mailbox, and I just love it, because it's the pictures, the knowledge that is being shared by just brilliant, wise coaches and athletes, the entertaining things. And one of my favorite parts is the gear section, you know, not just the ads, but some of the gear reviews that you have. There's something about looking and turning the pages and seeing the gloss, and it's more tangible. You're using more senses than just your eyes.
Yeah, that's good, Scott. More senses as you're interacting.
You can smell it, Don.
The appeal of the print version, you know, what's special about it? You know, you mentioned that there's 80 pages of content, and it's all ultra running, and that's true. You know, you pick up your Family Circle or whatever magazine, and there's
Family Circle.
You have to read a little bit about macaroni and cheese, and then, you know, some diarrhea stuff. But with this, it's every
diarrhea.
I don't know. I haven't read Family Circle in a while, but I imagine there's something in there about some family concoction to help the people out with that. But the Ultra Running Magazine, everything is, the ads are appealing to me. I want to read about Tailwind, or I want to read about Sport Legs, or I want to look at these ads things. But the other thing, the 23 to 25% mm-hmm. of names listed, and I'm glad you still have that, because what's cooler than being a mid-packer or even backpacker, but to get your name written, and you can actually see that, you know what, I'm part of this community. Mm-hmm. I ranked high
it's
enough
inclusive.
To get... It's inclusive, and you become a community family member when that name's posted in there. That's cool.
I have a question about that, Carl. There's a lot of magazines that cater to running, even trail running. Is Ultra Running Magazine the only periodical that actually lists race results like it does?
Yeah, it's the only one I know of that does.
Yeah, I think that's a unique
And that is
factor.
Special, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think since the sport is so inclusive to list the winners and the finishers and the last place and everything in between is important and part of our culture. We're never going to stop doing that. If we did every race like the magazine used to, it would be a phone book. That just wouldn't work. So, but yeah, we try to definitely get a geographic, coverage of the race reports that we do. And we do brand new races, and we also do classics. We do huge ones. Like if we do JFK, which we're going to do in March, you know, that'd be 1,000 names in here. Yeah. And, that's a good thing. But we do have to keep it to like 25-30% of the total content.
Is Ultra Running Magazine, does it have worldwide distribution? Does it go beyond the United States, and how much, if you can share?
Yeah, we do have subscribers who are international, and with the shipping, an international subscription is like $99 or something crazy. So we have seen more international people go for the digital issue, which is a much more efficient way to get the info. But, you know, it's not the same as print. What we did is we did have to make a decision to define ourselves as North America focused. And, it's a global world. I realize that. And it's pretty narrow-minded to go North American only for such a global sport. And that's one of the most exciting parts about it with like UTWT and UTMB and everything. But to do our job well, we just have to draw the line on North American ultras and North American ultra runners. So that's what our content is. It's North America. So when it comes to UTMB, we cover it, but we kind of focus on North Americans in the race, you know, with our photos and so on in our reports. But that's our focus geographically.
So Carl, you have a new edition coming out. How do you select the content? How do you select what you're going to put in and who is going to contribute for you?
Yeah. It's kind of like an ultra race, cause we have a plan in advance. We have it mapped out for the whole year. But there's always room for change and for new things because new content comes to us or new trends emerge. And, sometimes there's something that just comes up that we need to run with or publish. So it is a little bit of both, so we have a plan, and in 18, you know, that plan, we're actually bringing in 6 new columnists, and we are trying to bring in, you know, some new things to spice things up. That's pretty exciting for us, and that's going to happen with the February issue, which we're working on now, and it'll have the new columnists, and we're also going to really do a much deeper dive on the Ultra Runner of the Year, FKT of the Year, and also the annual stats in the sport. So we're going to really blow that up, do tons of photos, and we're excited about this February issue. And hopefully readers will like it. And then, beginning in March, each issue we set forth a theme, which is kind of loose, but it's a theme for each issue, and then the content flows. And the entire magazine doesn't have that precise theme, but that's kind of a guideline and thread that holds it together. And it puts some there, I think, for the magazine. So like you remember, the March, you know, issue is all about training and adds a little more interest and value to it. But that's kind of how we approach it.
One of the things that you mentioned that I absolutely love is the annual statistics. That is really one of the things I look forward to because we all feel part of the community, and to see how the sport is either growing or and in what areas it's growing, I really think that that's a lot of fun. How do you come up with those statistics?
That one goes back to Corey. He has put so much work and time and effort in building systems and databases to track every ultra and every ultra finish in North America. And he's got a really rich database now. He's taken like three whacks at it, and he writes code and has created this great system. And our database now, I can definitely say it's the most comprehensive in the sport. And if there's one thing that we're going to do as Ultra Running, you know, media group or whatever, magazine and online, I mean, we've got to have the numbers. We've got to have the stats and the info. So that's the backbone. Yeah, and with Corey, we got that now. And I hope people come to our website to find race results and so on and find themselves. And they should check out the new system we have because it's really great. Corey just pushes buttons and moves electrons and it all comes out. That's the way it is from, but it's a lot of long hours and late nights of coding and then entering the data. We have some dedicated people who do nothing but track down and enter race results and stuff for us too. There's all kinds of great stuff, I'll say now participation in the sport, the number of finishes has exceeded 100,000 for the first time in 2017. Wow. Yeah, that's a massive milestone, and I've been waiting for that day, and it's big news, and it's a great thing that Ultra Running's now had over 100,000 finishes in 2017. But you're right, things like gender participation, women's participation keeps going up. It's now over 34%. hopefully that'll keep going up, and I think it will. But
is that a high, Carl? Is 34% participation by women, is that a high?
Yeah, that's definitely a high. That has also trended up pretty much every year as well.
That's good news.
It is, definitely.
What has been your most proud addition to the magazine? I mean, if we look back to 2013 when you took this magazine over, and I think that's when the color entered, and you've done all sorts of different additions. And what has been your most proud addition? Not edition, addition.
Yeah. It was actually Medinger who brought color to the
oh,
magazine.
Oh, it was. Yep. Sorry about that. Yep. Tropical John. No, of course, Tropical sure. John yeah. brought color to the magazine. What am I thinking? Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I know Anne too, and one of her sayings is no good deed goes unpunished. And they got, for doing such a great thing, they got so much negative blowback and flack for that too, because people really do not like change.
Yeah.
But it was a great thing. And, but yeah, whenever we change things too, we do get some tough blowback, but you just have to push through it if it's something you believe in and think it's the right thing. And on our score, you know, I think, graphically we added a lot. Lisa Smith is our art director, and she's really talented and really creative. And, but also is a real pro and knows what a real magazine should look like, but does so with a unique flair that I think really helps bring the pages to life. And I guess it's a minor thing in a way, but we organized the magazine more with those four sections. So mm-hmm. there's kind of an organizing principle to it. And she created little icons for each section. And it was kind of subtle, but some people were confused by it. But then now I just think it's a really nice way to organize what we're doing. And, you know, our big thing is we want to grow the sport, preserve, you know, the culture of the sport. And these sections help do that. They help ultra runners. They bring new people in. They help them succeed. They entertain people, hopefully. And then they also bring life to the history and the lore of the sport. So I guess that's what I'm happy about, so well, we've done that.
One of the things, because Don, I know, is just itching to ask a question about the culture part of it, but one of the things that I think you're probably aware of, but you have actually allowed other ultra runners to follow their dream. There's a whole host of photographers out there. We did a podcast not long ago with some of the photographers out there, and they're enjoying a way of life, I think, in part because of Ultra Running Magazine and the color and the number of photos that you include in the magazine. It's you know, if you go back to the 1980s or early 90s when Ultra Running Magazine probably didn't include a whole lot of photos, and there probably weren't a whole lot of photographers who were making money submitting photos to not only print ads within your magazine, but also, you know, cover art and stuff like that. So I know that they're grateful, and it sure is a lot of eye candy for us that get to turn the pages.
Yeah, photography is key, and we love the photographers and what they're doing, and we really want to support them. And, you know, we definitely underpay them for the value they provide, but we do pay them. And it wasn't always the case that photographers were getting paid in the sport. And so we have tried to be transparent with things like that. And so Erica manages all of the photographer relationships that we have, and she does a fantastic job. And that's a huge part of why our photos are so much better. And I think it's provided some structure for them. And yeah, we have a compensation guideline now. We do the same thing with our columnists. So things are transparent and consistent. And I think that's helped build that photographer community as well.
You have so many photos in there. How do you collect them? How does somebody just submit them to you if they're out at a race and they've got some great photos they've captured? Because I can't imagine that you know, have your your finger on the pulse of every single you know shot that's out there. How do you gather these up?
Yeah, how do we gather the photos? Well, Erica's just walked in the room. Well, she works so hard at that, and it is so hard to get like high res photos that work. And we're religious about giving photographer credit and to getting the captions right. And you know, she puts in a ton of hours and a lot of time with that, and has the relationships. So, yeah, I would say it's all about relationships, like so many things. And we can, and we'll now tell Erica, oh, we need a photo of so-and-so at such and such a race. And she looks at us and pauses and then just dives in, and she can always get us the photo. It's amazing.
That's good. Yeah. I was going to ask you a question about culture, Scott. You were right. And
do you remember what it is?
I don't even know what it was at that time. You just thought I was going to ask that, but I will formulate a question.
Okay.
Carl, culture is such an important part of our sport. That's what brought you in. That's what brought Scott and I in. It's important that we preserve it. Do you see our culture is steady, or is there a risk of it unraveling?
Well, there's definitely a challenge to that as things grow and change and it gets bigger. Mm-hmm. I think there's a different culture in, you know, road running and other types of running that's more competitive, more intense, less collective, and so, and maybe in triathlons and that sort of thing. So I think we do need to work to make sure as new entrants come into the sport that you know, the culture does stay there, and that everybody is pulling for everyone. Everyone's loving the trails and taking care of the trails. And there's a respect for what we're doing, and that it's special, and that people aren't taking, you know, they're giving, and that the sport gives back as long as we take that approach. And, you know, we can worry about it and we can't compel it. But I think it's really safe, to be honest, because I think that the nature of ultra running and the things that happen to people out there when you're out there for that long, and where you go individually, and then the support you need from the community, that the culture is kind of wired into the sport. Mm-hmm. And I feel good about that.
Yeah, I agree with those comments. If you looked at all the other sports that are out there that you're aware of, which one do you think most replicates or mimics our culture? There's cultures within each community. Who's most closely related to the ultra tribe?
You know, I'm not sure. I guess what comes to mind is maybe the Nordic skiing sports. You know, the skate skiers who do 50Ks. I mean, but also the ski jumpers. I was just watching the Olympic trials to my kids. God, I'm excited for the Olympics in February.
Yeah, I love
and the
Olympics.
Jumpers. Yeah. Well, the ski jumpers, and man, talk about stress, boy. I saw this, you know, they always have the last jump, and who's going to get the gold, or who's going to get the ticket to the Olympics. And the second to last jumper went, she had a great jump, and she executed. And she's at the bottom of the mountain, and she's going to the Olympics except for the last jumper.
Oh.
And the last jumper is up there, and you can just see the tension and the focus. And she executes and lands it, and now she's going to the Olympics. And that second place winner was right there to give her a huge hug and congratulate her. So that was a pretty beautiful thing. And I think that's, you know, what we've got in our sport.
Yeah. Scott, you used to ski, didn't you? That's, if you ever listen to a podcast, Carl, you would know that's an inside joke.
I bring it up every podcast.
Anytime he can, if anybody mentions anything about snow, he'll work into the conversation that he used to ski. Now, you know what I think? I think sports like rock climbing or surfing, anytime there's risk involved, because there's risk for endurance running, and you're out there on a trail, you're running through the day and into the night. When there's risk, I think there's some similarities between sports and tribes, and I think there's big risk in some of those sports, like when you're on a board out in the ocean trying to to bring yourself in on a wave. There's risk there too. So I think there's similarities in those kind of sports.
So looking forward, we're just starting the new year here in 2018. You know, I know that you get together with your team periodically and do your sabbatical where you do brainstorming. So what's new for Ultra Running Magazine in 2018? What are you excited about?
Well, definitely the new columnist that we have coming on board, and we're excited about that, and people will see them in that February issue. And we, you know, we don't do like a big press release and a big puffy thing. I just want to kind of put it out there and let people see it and experience it. Hopefully people will like that. And the perspectives and the kind of new topics that we'll have in the magazine. That's definitely something. You know, we're doing the FKT. I like to call it, you know, it's kind of the most notable FKT, but FKTs are different solo efforts. And, but they're really, really cool. And we're covering that in a big way. And we're lucky to have Buzz Burrell and Peter Baquin, who just created the area, the whole concept of organizing it and of doing it themselves. So that's going to be a bigger emphasis. And our coverage of it in the February issue hopefully is going to be really fun for people. And we'll continue to cover that. You know, I think Don, Mr. 200 Miler, I'd really like us to get some good coverage of that, because that's a new thing, and it's pretty audacious. And we've covered it online, but I'd like to get more coverage of that segment of the sport. And Don is a triple crown man. He probably could do that. What do you think?
I think you should write some articles about those 200s, Don. I think we just committed you.
Well, that's great. It, you know, I'm good for 50 words or less.
Is more when it comes to writing.
There you go.
Hey, Carl, I would assume that you are on the cutting edge of new gear. What is the most exciting piece of gear, new gear out there that just makes your skin tingle?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we do well with the gear reviews because we have a really talented guy who does it for us, Donald Baraglio. And on the shoes, it's Brett Rivers and the team at SFRC. Uh-huh. So we're in
San
really
Francisco
great hands. And they
company.
Just do. Right. You're right. And he and his team do our shoe reviews. And we're lucky to have them doing that. But Donald is he's a great writer. He's an ultra runner, and he's really thorough and kind of like a scientist with the approach he takes to the gear reviews. So, I mean, it's just really quality reviews, and we're lucky we have him. So that's why our gear reviews are good. And then Lisa manages to get a ton of content in a few pages in a readable and approachable way. But, you know, for me personally, on the gear front, it's probably these new waist belts. There's one called the Naked Waist Belt that I just love
naked,
for some
naked
reason.
Running. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there's all the big guys doing it, and they're doing it well. But there's something about that Naked Running Waist Belt. It's elastic and one size, and you put it on, and it just like seamless. It's like part of your body. And, it has a really big capacity to carry stuff.
You know what I like about it, Carl? You know what I like about it is it holds my gut in. It's like a it's like a girdle. That's what I like about it.
You know, I think you just exposed me. that must be it. As I'm getting older. Yeah. Yeah, other than my ego probably getting bigger, my stomach is getting bigger. I can't do anything about it.
Maybe that's
it's
where
weird.
That maybe that's where you keep your ego.
Yeah. The stuff is just sliding down. It's awful. Yeah.
Go ahead, Carl. I was switching topics and I realized that you're not done with this one. I had a question for you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think I've always had a hard time carrying stuff on my back. And so I've always carried big bottles. But putting weight right on my hips is like the one place that's efficient for me to carry stuff too. That's why I like the waist belt.
You mentioned you have themes in the magazine. And do you tell all your authors, this is our theme this time, give us an article about this? Or is this theme something that, as readers, we should just kind of pick up on and see if we can figure it out along the way, and you keep it a mystery? And, you know, how do you work your theme?
Well, we have the editorial calendar, which has every issue and every theme. And I have, like, the gear reviews are all planned out, too, for the next year. And then we have the writers, the columnists, and maybe they're told us what they're going to write on. And Erica manages that organizing tool. It's a big spreadsheet. But the guidance to the columnists is we tell them the theme and tell them if they are inspired to write something on that theme, to do so. But if they're not, it's not a big deal. It's up to them. Because at the end of the day, what's most important is they're writing about things that they have passion about. But that's all I want. That's the most important thing. And so the theme, it's a guideline. And so it is pretty fuzzy, you know, to be honest. Sometimes we might get 6 articles on theme and sometimes less. You know, we also have a section that's just features, which is just unique over the top stuff, or it's stuff that I'll really solicit from a specific writer. And I do find features that are on theme. I have to do that so that the theme is covered for sure. And then whether the columnists come along for a ride on the theme is, yeah, it's kind of issue to issue.
Now, we've jumped into your busy time, your schedule, as you're getting February's edition ready. How much time do you spend on a particular magazine? How much are you working? 40 hours a week? Are you 4 hours a week? What does it look like?
You know, for me, when the deadlines come, I do have to put everything aside and really focus. You know, we've refined it over the years, and it keeps getting more and more efficient. For me, to answer your question, I probably put in like 20 hours on each issue right when the crunch comes, and I do it maybe like over 2 or 3 days. And I found it's actually a lot more efficient to like procrastinate and just wait for it all to pile up and then immerse myself so that I know everything that's in there. If you like try to do it as you go and like make this 80-page thing, a few pages at a time, it then is a not as good a product, and you end up also taking stuff in and out, wasting time, and it's a lot more work. So I'm surrounded by incredible people on the team who tee up this content, put it in, and then it's there. It really stresses me out to try to find and track it down now. And so just returning an email is really hard for me. It's really stupid, but it is, because I can take forever to do it, and I want it to be right. And I'm not ready until I'm ready. So, I get to wait and then just do everything and put it together, and that works well.
Okay, that's my new philosophy for 2018. Procrastination is good. I mean, look at that magazine. It's a beautiful magazine. It must be the procrastination factor. I'm going to give it a go.
I'm kind of the only one who gets to procrastinate, though.
Oh.
I see. Everyone else is kind of on it and doing this stuff, so I'm pretty lucky. But no, I think you should incorporate more procrastination for sure, Don.
Thank you, Carl.
With your experience and success by being a publisher of Ultra Running Magazine, is there another magazine that is in the future of the Hoagland family and Hoagland Publishing, like a quilting magazine or
family
something
circle?
Like that? Family Circle?
Okay, so you're definitely a business guy. you know, I I don't know what's next. I always like to, yeah, if you're going to do something, you need to do it. And so, yeah, we have this platform. We have the systems. We know what we're doing. We know how to do it. We do it really efficiently, I think. So we kind of have a formula down. Yeah, so we could find another niche. That's what you do in business. Mm-hmm. You have your skill set, then you run with it. But I'm not yet. I'm not, because the problems around print, it's a little bit daunting to do more. But we think about it. And to be honest, the one thing that I pushed for with Corey is a basketball magazine. Because my son, who's 13, is obsessed with basketball. Like more, it's really pretty cool for me to see, because I get obsessed with things, and he's obsessed. I mean, he can tell you the starting lineup for the 76ers in 1973. So wow. He's crazy. And I don't think there's great periodicals for the NBA, but maybe nobody cares. See, that's the problem. Because the NBA is really hitting on all cylinders and connecting, I think, with the younger generation. But yeah, does it need a great print periodical? I don't know. But that is one that we've thought about.
So, you know, as we finish up this podcast, we know that one of the things on your calendar is that number 10 silver buckle attempt at Western States. What race, I mean, you also have the ability to see all these new and exciting races out there. Are there any races on your bucket list?
Besides the 200s.
Hey, that's a good way to cover it, Carl.
Yeah.
It's just go out and do it.
I'll pace you.
Boy, Eric and I did the TRT in 160, 170, and boy, that just about killed me. But on that topic, Western States, if I did, well, I'm going for number 10. If I get number 10, or if I don't get number 10, it's my last. I've been hogging a spot in the race. I've been lucky to be able to do that. All these people want to do it. 10 is way more than enough. And I got on that track, but this is it. I've had 9 starts and 9 good outcome. So I'm going to go for number 10. And then if I don't get it, I'm not doing it again. So, yeah. And then after that, you know, the sky's the limit, but it's hard for me to think about anything but that right now. I'm dying to do East Coast races. I'm dying to do Midwestern races. I'm dying to do the sport and see new races. And for me, I've just been obsessed with Western States all these years. That I have, and every race I do in the spring is just as a training to lead up to that, and that's the way it's been for me, and I'll be ready to break out of that mold. And yeah, you said I was at 70. Of course, I probably got to try to get to 100, and yeah, the last 25 or so are going to be new races for me. I don't know what yet.
Good stuff. Hey, and if you want to get more of Carl and his magazine, what's always great, right in about the third page in, is you always have a bit of an editorial there written by you on your current thoughts and what you're thinking and predictions for the year or whatever might be there. Always enjoy that part of your magazine. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for putting in the passion and the dedication to keep us all plugged in. I think you have single-handedly made people better runners. You know, I know that I'm better for reading this, and you gather information as you go through it. And so thank you, Carl, for helping provide some lessons along the way for me.
Well, right back at you on that. Don, you and Scott do the same thing for the sport and really help others and support others and do everything the right way. And we love your podcast and what you guys are doing too.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to us. If someone is just entering the sport, or if you're just not very intelligent and you haven't subscribed,
wait a second, Scott.
And I just offended all of our audience. And you
at
haven't
least me. If you offended me.
If you haven't subscribed to Ultra Running Magazine, we do have a link on our partners page. Go to trailrunnernation.com, hit the partner link, go over there, click on that link, and you can get a discount on a year subscription. If I were you, I'd save the number of clicks, because you only have so many clicks in your life. Just like you have so many competitive racing years in your life.
Yeah.
You have so many clicks. Don't click for 1 year. Just click for like a 10-year subscription.
Do they have those?
They do now. If Carl doesn't have a 10-year subscription, he's going to have one by the end of this podcast.
Think big, Carl. Think big.
Scott is the businessman. We'll add that.
The renewing thing is always a pain.
You need auto renewal. That's what we need. Scott, think about that. Auto renewal.
Just auto renew. Anyway, it's a great magazine. Pick it up. I know there's a lot of running stores that you can actually go and pick one up in a running store also, but there's something magical about going out to the mailbox, opening it up, throwing the bills on the ground, and pulling out the magazine, zipping it out of the plastic wrapper that keeps it nice and protected. And
just, Carl put it in there. Carl and Erica both stuffed all of
those
and sealed
them up.
That's
the 20 hours that he spends is actually heat shrinking that on there.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things I look forward to every month. I'm a little disappointed you don't do 12 issues a year because there is one month that I need to get the what do you call it? Those lights. When you get depressed, you put the light in front of you to
oh, you get this, you get the seasonal associative disorder,
right,
or something.
There's that month when the magazine doesn't come out that I get a little depressed and I miss my monthly magazine. So that's something you can work on for 2019.
We'll put that on the list.
Yeah.
Don't listen to me, Carl.
Hey, Carl, that's not on my list. I want to stay friends with you. So go out and live long and run
Moss.
Thank you.